Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Over the next 60 minutes, we're going to pay tribute to a rock icon, considered by many the most innovative and most creative rock guitarist of any generation, Eddie Van Halen.
I get up, and nothing gets me down.
From David Lee Roth to Sammy Hagar and everything after and in between. By paying tribute, we've got two great guests who knew the family well, and obviously Eddie, a dear friend, you might say a brother from another mother. He, of course, Eddie Van Halen, and the two that I'm about to introduce you to, Rick Granati and David Granati. David, of course, the incredibly talented guitarist, one of the best ever in and around this city that we call Pittsburgh, will begin, and then brother Rick will jump in as well. David, let's talk about Eddie Van Halen. You know, as I mentioned early in the broadcast tonight, when you really got behind the showmanship of David Lee Roth as they rolled into the 80s and became more of a commercial success, people started to really realize what type of talent that Eddie Van Halen had, including something he was famous for, tapping as opposed to playing. Explain that tapping technique that he was famous for, David.
Okay, yes, it's a method of where you, you're fretting with your right hand. As opposed to your left hand, or in addition to your left hand. So just the same as you would hold a note, say, your ring finger on your left hand, you would fret with your first finger, typically like your index, with the right hand. And therefore, you could do what are known as trills, like very fast, and particularly triplets, like one, two, three, da, 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 which he does on Eruption. So it's certainly it increases the speed, but it also opens up a number of possibilities of musical expression, like arpeggios, being like he does in Hot for Teacher. So it had been done. It was done in classical music with nylon string guitars, but never in a pop context, or certainly in a metal context.
Is it safe to say that you can compare him to some of the greats? And Rick and I were talking about this earlier. Obviously, you think of the man that they named a guitar after, Les Paul, who had high praise for Van Halen, and obviously because of the guitar ability of Eddie Van Halen. But, I mean, you think of Hendrix, you think of Jimmy Page, obviously the British Invasion, Keith Richards, George Harrison. Could you really say he was one of the greatest, quote-unquote, rock guitarist of all time, maybe even an argument for the greatest?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the taste is a thing, too. You know, when you say one person's the best, you're going to disappoint somebody. You know, when you get into that category, that level, to say one, if not the best, like I say, it's a matter of taste. But the thing that's amazing about him as well, though, not unlike Les Paul. He was a true innovator with sound and his equipment. He would try things that Lord knows what made him think to do it. One in particular was when you play at really high volume with humbucking pickups. That was one thing he did. He put a Gibson-style pickup in a Fender guitar, Fender-style body. And you get sometimes the humbuckers will howl, particularly like with a Les Paul-type guitar,
mm-hmm.
When you get up at really loud volumes. And it's not a good feedback. It's not Carlos Santana, woo, you know, the pretty feedback. It's more of a howl, like a howling. And something made him think to dunk it in melted wax. So he took paraffin wax, like you would wax a surfboard, because, you know, being Californians. And he dipped it in there, and he said he ruined the first couple we tried because he left it in too long. But then he figured it out, and it... it's a micro layer of paraffin wax. The coils, that's what's happening when it feeds back. The coils start to oscillate, and that's how you get that sustain and feedback. And so what it did, it eliminated the howling, like odd harmonics, and just kept the pure what you're looking for in feedback. And what made him think to do that? And now, if you buy a Seymour Duncan pickup. One of the more popular pickups. If you look really close, they all do it now. Or just everybody's kind of adopted that technique. And this is just something he did off the cuff. And what made him think to do that is amazing. And he also did a thing with his amplifiers. He took a voltage regulator and pumped up the voltage to the amps a little bit beyond what the amp was designed for.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, we all know if this one goes to 11, it's basically the equivalent of turning up to 11. And he would fry his tubes like after a couple of nights and have to replace them all. And if he did it too much, he'd have to get a transformer. It was a very expensive way to get a guitar sound. But that you hear that's prevalent, like on the first two Van Halen records. That's how he was getting that sound. And what made him think to do that is just so. In addition to his musical talent, he was quite a what I would call an impert, as opposed to expert. You know, it wasn't like he was this big technical guy. He just wasn't afraid to try stuff.
Well, that brings me to this. We're talking to David Granati, Rick Granati. They toured with Van Halen. Rick will be joining us in the next segment, and then we'll say goodbye to David at the bottom of the hour. And Rick and I are really going to talk about some personal stories and connections to that family, especially monumental occasions when they toured together and when Eddie would come and stay with the family in Patterson Township and nearby Beaver Falls. But that brings me to what I was saying, too. When he was starting to make his way, it wasn't synthesizers. It wasn't, you know, technology basically doing the recording. It was just the musicians being raw in the studio, guitar a strap around their shoulder, and just going to it and sweating and bleeding their craft. So Eddie Van Halen may have tweaked his amplifier and did a few other things and did that tapping thing that we talked about. But the bottom line was that was all Eddie Van Halen. Whenever you heard a guitar riff or something that people remember him for, that was just his skill set coming out and doing an incredible job. Right, David?
Yes. I got to add one little thing, too, that he shared with us. Okay, his famous paint job. That was the other thing, too. It was bicycle paint. He just did masking tape, you know, the famous red and white striped guitar, which I got to play, by the way.
That's
really
pretty cool.
Honored to have done. He tore it apart and, you know, and took the pickups out and everything. And then he said he couldn't remember how to wire it back up. So he got a little impatient, wanted to try it. So he said, I just touched two wires together till I heard something and soldered it. So he didn't bother to solder on the tone control. So, you know, most guitars have at least two knobs, okay? And prior to him, they always had more than one knob. Then Eddie comes out with this killer guitar and there's only one knob on it because it was out of ignorance. So he said, all right, I didn't pay. I said, I don't use the tone control anyhow. So he bypassed it. Now everybody thought, oh, that's why he's getting that sound, because it's a more direct, which in theory is. He said, you know, the less circuitry you go through, the bigger and more pure the sound. So anyway, something he did as a an oversight. Every like Ibanez to this day comes out with guitars with one volume knob, and Fender adopted that for a while. And this was he was laughing about it. He said, "This is something I did out of ignorance, and now they're all copying this."
Eddie Van Halen, when we look back at the rock icon's life, he passed away after a long battle of cancer at the age of 65. When we come back, we're going to get a little bit more personal as far as Eddie Van Halen, the human being. Father, husband, rock legend, and more importantly, why he loved Pittsburgh. Stay tuned. The Granatis and I coming back. Rob Pratt Tuesday night, paying tribute to the great Eddie Van Halen until 10 o'clock. Familiar guitar riff of the great Eddie Van Halen, who passed away today at the age of 65. We pay tribute to him until 10 o'clock tonight with the Granati Brothers.
I have the news, baby. All about your disease.
So, David Granati, let's talk more music with you, and then Rick and I are going to talk more of the man, the myth, the legend. Were they a different band between David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar musically, or was it still the same sound, just a different front man? What do you think, David?
Eddie had definitely evolved in his songwriting, and it improved quite a bit. It was still, they had the same fire, but they had matured by the time Sammy had more vocal range. So they were able to do things in different keys and maybe expand a little beyond the original Van Halen. But for my case, there's nothing like the David Lee era. I mean, Sammy's a great singer and everything, but Dave's Van Halen for me.
You know, what amazes me was the range of Eddie Van Halen. I mean, he could play an acoustic guitar. He could play rhythm and blues. He could do a Muddy Waters. He could do a Chuck Berry. So obviously he was influenced. Motown, obviously, that very famous guitar riff that they were famous for that appeared on many of their hit records, people like the Supremes, the Temptations. So he was an eclectic musician, but he didn't really read music that well, but he had a good ear, did he not?
Yeah, an amazing ear. Similar to us, had the classical background through the parents, like we did. So they grew up learning and playing classical and appreciating it. So that was a big part of their secret, like a secret weapon. Because at that time, not a whole lot of bands were doing that. And then there was that whole shredder era after that. We had all these different guitar players going, like neoclassical, like Yngwie Malmsteen being a really good one.
So if he would have lived, you know, I love the Cultural District. I love the Benedum Center. I love Heinz Hall. I love when somebody who you would least expect would play with a symphony. It just seems to work. And I think it also shows people that musicians are musicians are musicians. In other words, I think he could have played on any stage. Obviously, there was so much more for him to do. But what do you think he could have been doing after this whole rock career maybe would have finally slowed down? And because of the pandemic, there's nobody really touring right now. But what do you think he could have done musically? Obviously, he could have taught generations to come, right?
Yeah, musically, I tend to think maybe if not more, at least as much with the technical innovations. You know, like because he had his own product line, several product lines. You know, different guitars, amps, stuff, real practical stuff. He really worked on the tremolo bar, which he used. And typically it'll make your guitar go really out of tune, like with an old Fender-style guitar. And he was one of the first guys to work with Floyd Rose, is a manufacturer. It's called a locking nut. and it's a way that it locks down the strings so you don't go out of tune as much.
So
prior to
go ahead, finish your thought. Go ahead.
But prior to that, he had this great innovation. He took a U.S. quarter, 25-cent quarter, and stuck it under the bridge of his Fender style tremolo, and to keep it in tune. And of course, every one of my guitars, I don't use a quarter, but it's a shim that you put underneath there and makes it stay in tune so much better. Just one more thing that Lord knows why or how he thought to do it, but I would kind of think if he had lived a little longer, he certainly would have come up with more. A lot of it's practical stuff, like that.
You know, you have to believe there were others influenced by him, contemporaries like a Prince or even a latter contemporary in Lenny Kravitz. You got to believe they all bought into his sound, and how Michael Jackson and even the great Quincy Jones, who did so many things in movies and television soundtracks, and of course with Frank Sinatra was his number one conductor for many years after Nelson Riddle, when they jumped in that project that would eventually become the greatest selling album of all time, Thriller, Quincy knew that guitar riff in Beat It would work, and it had to come from Eddie Van Halen. And we have a great story coming up with Rick about that in our next segment. Why do you just think that guitar, that rock and roll guitar, just seemed to fit everywhere he placed it? How could he just melt into the background and it just always appeared that was the way the sound was intended to be? I mean, when you think about how trend-setting that was, and so many artists still do it today, they blend rock and roll, rap, they sample, they put guitar in songs that you would never even anticipate or even think it would happen. How is it that Eddie Van Halen just made it work? Was that because of that ear that he had, more so than being able to read notes? He just heard it in his mind and then just laid it down on that guitar, right?
Yeah, definitely. And plus, it was a good timing thing, too. The 80s were a big explosive time, Everything was bigger and better and flashier. That's one thing, now it's real easy to make fun of the 80s, especially looking at some of the videos, over the top. But there were things that made your jaw drop. Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk, David Lee Roth doing the back jump, the back flip, and Eddie doing all that stuff. It made you draw your jaw drop. And it was the perfect timing for that style, because he was, a very explosive, very flashy guitar player.
Everybody talks about David Lee Roth being this Barnum and Bailey, this showman with the glitter, the Liberace of rock and roll, and I get that. But you have to admit, and I see a lot of that in you, and I saw it long before I even knew who Eddie Van Halen was, when you were just barely 21 performing in this region, and especially at Maury Speakeasy. He was a great showman, too, was he not, David?
Absolutely. Or like we always say, too, Dave could be that bold because he had the fastest gun in the West. It was perfect. Eddie was like, you rode into town and you had the best gunslinger. So it was a perfect 1-2 punch.
You think people are going to be sampling him and listening and learning from him 30 years from now?
Yeah, certainly.
Hey, listen, I love you, brother. I know you're busy in that exceptionally successful recording studio of yours in Ambridge, and you could continue to put your ear to the wall as far as what's making music today and doing other things in the way of recording, and I know it's a busy day for you, and I appreciate you giving me some time tonight on the radio, okay?
Oh, man, I appreciate the chance to talk about our friend and brother, and our hearts go out to Alex, man. I can't imagine what he's going through, so we'll all say a prayer for him.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, David Granati, when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation tonight with Rick Granati, and we've got a lot to get to.
Hey, Dave, you better...
All right, so when we come back, Rick and I, now that David has left the building, are going to really focus on personal experiences on the road, in Hollywood, and in Beaver Falls. And we're going to talk about that Michael Jackson connection and how Eddie Van Halen didn't even know who Quincy Jones was. And his father simply said, if Quincy Jones asked you to work with him, it would be a good thing that you work with him. And he did. They made magic, they made history, and it became one of the best-selling songs and the greatest album of all time. Stay with us, folks. We continue to look back at the life of Eddie Van Halen, who died today at the age of 65 after a long battle with cancer. Rob Pratt, Tuesday night, News Radio 1020, KDK. And then gets throat cancer, and then it spreads to his brain, and it takes his life. Just a sad day for people who loved him, loved his music, but especially for people like my guest Rick Granati and Brother David, who knew him personally. Hey, before we get into him coming to Beaver Falls and going out on the town and your love for the family and him and your journey on the road and how you first met, really, when you think of the significance of what Quincy Jones and he did just by FedExing a package one place and then back to another place, laying and plugging in that guitar riff to Beat It on the best-selling album of all time, Thriller, it truly revolutionized the way music is heard today. But he did it as a gift, but it truly became a gift, Rick, that kept on giving. Explain that, please.
Well, when he came to visit, I mentioned to him we were all in a huddle in our back room. Ed always liked to huddle with you, and he'd always give you a kiss and a hug, and he'd say something that would make us laugh. But I said, Ed, great guitar solo on Beat It. He said, did you know it was me? Then he went, ha, ha, ha. And I said, oh, man, instantly. And then he told us the story that Quincy Jones called him in his studio, and he said, yo, Edward, Quincy. And he said, I hung up on him. I had no idea who this guy was. So he said, he calls back, Quincy Jones, please don't hang up. He said, I hang up a second time. He calls back a third time and said, Edward, write my name down. Write this number down. Check around. Ask a few people about me. Please call me back. I got a very serious situation I want to ask you to be involved in. So Eddie called his father. His father said, Quincy Jones, when we still lived in the Netherlands in Holland and you were a little boy, Ed, Quincy Jones was making soundtrack music, winning awards. Wrote the theme song for the TV show Mod Squad. If you have a chance to work with him, jump on it. So Eddie called him back and apologized. Quincy had a guy, a courier, deliver it right to Eddie. He said, I got something Michael Jackson's working on. He loves your fast leads. Listen to it. If you like it, put something on it. If you want to edit it, whatever you want to do. If you don't want to do anything, we understand. Ed said they brought the package over kind of instantly. So Ed said, I opened it up, put it on, 2-inch reel. He said, I listened to the tune. I instantly dug it. He said, the second take, I packed the box up, and I shipped it right back over to him instantly. He said, I didn't tell the band. I didn't tell my manager. I didn't tell an attorney. He said, I sent it to them free of charge. When it hit, everybody in the band, our manager, our attorneys, everybody went crazy. They said, you're giving them our sound free. You could have made a big percentage of this. It's going to be a big record. Ed said, we never had a number one song that we wrote ourselves. We did You Really Got Me, Pretty Woman, Dancing in the Street, several other songs that they did covers of. They gave them a hit song for the FM format. He said, I wrote Jump. We put it out. He said, after this thing with Michael Jackson, he said, I put Jump out. It became number one for 7 weeks. He said it came back to me. And that's Eddie Van Halen in a nutshell. That's how the man thought. He did it from his heart. He didn't hesitate. And, man, the rest is history. He helped Michael Jackson cross over to a lot of audience that he probably would have never had with that guitar solo.
Became a trend, too, in music and is still being done today. Okay, so how did you first meet him? What year? Where were you?
Okay, 79, we put our record out. WAVE in Pittsburgh started playing our record, which was history. It was the first time they played a local band. February 15th, 1979. March 15th, we started our tour out on the West Coast. We were touring with a band called the Fabulous Poodles for a couple weeks. We played the famous Whiskey A Go-Go in Los Angeles, and we did really well. Our record company, three nights, two shows a night, and we really caught on fire. A lot of people from Beaver County lived there. Our record company said, you guys are a great live band. We're really going to give you a push. But reality is, in about a week, you got two shows with this hot new band called Van Halen. So we're like, because we heard a little bit of it on the radio. So we show up in Caldwell, Idaho. We pull up, our truck sitting there with our road crew sitting in it looking dejected. We pull up in a station wagon. There's three buses and two semis, or two buses and three semis. We walk inside a small arena, and we hear guitar and drums and they were doing their sound check, and we went, oh, crap.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said, right?
Exactly. So we did our sound check. We went back. We were huddled. We were praying and saying, Lord, just let us get through this. It seemed like the biggest mismatch. A guy came back and said that his brother worked with Bruce Springsteen. He said, we've heard of you guys. He said, you're going to do okay. He said, just go out and do your best. So he gave us a little vote of confidence. We started playing, Rob. After the first song, the crowd was going crazy. We played the second song. It kept picking up. We caught on fire. So by the end of the set, they were screaming for an encore. So we're walking off the stage, and a little guy comes over smoking a cigar. He said, hey, I'm Noel Monk, the manager of Van Halen. Great set. He said, go take that encore. And I spoke up, and I said, nah, they want Van Halen. He said, that's really cool. He said, I got to tell you, we've had a guy on tour with us named Robert Fleischman. He said Eddie was in the dressing room. He said after the first song, man, Fleischman's really kicking some you-know-what tonight. And they said, no, it's these guys that are all brothers and a cousin, and they look like Angus Young on acid. So he said, Ed came up after the first song.
Right.
He watched your set. He told me to tell you he loves you guys. He'll catch up with you tomorrow, and he wants you to do the rest of the tour. Well, it, like, blew the top of our heads off. And so the next night we played in Logan, that was Caldwell, Idaho. The next night, Logan, Utah, the same exact results. The crowd loved it. Met up with Eddie, start telling stories, talked about classical music. And he said, it's going to take a week or so to coordinate your schedule and ours, but you guys got the rest of the tour. That's how we met him. And it was like we knew him forever. And it was unbelievable. What a miracle. We'd have never bet on it in a million years.
So you go from Maury's Speakeasy, literally playing in front of hundreds and literally hundreds on a regular basis, to the Superdome in New Orleans in front of 70,000 people. Is it still so surreal to this day, years removed, knowing that you did it? And obviously you were thinking about those days today with the sad news of the passing of Eddie. Does it even seem real to this day, years later, that you actually did what you did with Van Halen, went on the road and toured with America's number one rock band?
You know, Rob, honestly, I give all the credit to God, because we had a little small back room, and we had like a small garage where we rehearsed, and we dreamt about being a band, listened to Beatles records and ELO and Elton John. And we went and saw Elton John all together, my brothers and I, with Yellow Brick Road. And we thought, man, we could see ourselves doing that. So it was like a miracle that we got a record deal. And then the next thing you know, so it's like bing, bing, bing. And we're out there with Van Halen. But I got to say, as much as you can hear on the records and everything and what you read about Eddie Van Halen and his band, they worked so, so hard. They did such big tours for all those years. And we watched them every night. They put everything they had into every show. Eddie put his soul into every song he played and every guitar solo. I saw Led Zeppelin when they first came out. They were nothing like the record. I was disappointed. Van Halen were amazing live, better than their records. And that's because they put everything they had into it. Eddie's soul was there. David Lee Roth put everything he had into it. They had nowhere to go but up and to be successful. They made it happen. They didn't get lucky. They earned it. And, I mean, we watched it night after night after night, I just thought, man, how do they do that? We learned so much from them, and they were like an open book. They told us everything. They welcomed us. We were at every party with them. It's just hard to believe. And that's, I mean, I think of myself as a nobody in the music business, and Eddie Van Halen treated me and my brothers like we were definitely somebody. Eddie really liked David and all the brothers, but he really thought David was a great guitar player, and he is.
No doubt. For those of us who have seen him perform many times, you can't argue a fact. Coming back, a night that they decided to go out on the town, and it wasn't the Sunset Strip. It was Chippewa, Pennsylvania. You don't want to miss that. Plus, we'll talk about his son, Wolfgang, the future, and obviously more of the legacy of Eddie Van Halen, who passed away today at the age of 65. Our tribute continues on Rock Pratt Tuesday night in just moments. KDK Radio. Good evening. Maestro at work, a little more. Eruption, Eddie Van Halen. Sounds like watching the stars twinkle in the sky. So many bright flashes, all more brilliant than the other. Eddie Van Halen. He will be missed. Rick Granati spending a couple of more moments with us. And we're going to podcast this. You can find it at kdkradio.com. I want to thank John Flavin for doing that. I want to thank my program director, Jim Gracie, who came back into work tonight after a long day to get us some of this music so we could get it on the air. He, too, like many of us, are just wondering what the world is going to be like without Eddie Van Halen. Forget the music, Rick. Let's talk about the man. And he was everything that you want to be as far as in a friend, a father, a husband, just a brother. Incredible individual. Tell us the story. We only got a couple of minutes. I want to try to get as much in here as I can. So he comes back. You pick him up in Pittsburgh across the street at the Bigelow Hotel before he performs at the Civic Arena just to spend a night with you in Beaver Falls, Patterson Township. And he wants to go out and grab a few beers. So you take him to a place that was known as Charlie's Courtside, as many of us who grew up in Beaver County remember it, in Chippewa. Tell the folks what that experience was like and what he did to try to, wear a mask to conceal his true identity like any other superhero.
Well, first of all, Rob, you just heard what you just heard there, that little bit of Eruption. Was he one of the best guitar players in the world ever?
No one even comes close. I'm sorry. And I've heard them all and I've played them all. He's the greatest rock guitarist of all time.
Best.
No, and yeah, I know David was trying to – listen, David was trying to be politically correct because he's a musician and they all work – a lot at their craft, and I get it. But from a fan's point of view, an entertainer's point of view, he's right up there with everyone. But when it comes to pure genius and innovator, no one even comes close. He is on that pedestal all alone, Eddie Van Halen. And I will take that with me till I meet him, hopefully someday, in that place that we all achieve to get to. So tell me about this night that you decided to go out and he wanted to go, and what he did to try to disguise who he was, but it really didn't last that long at Charlie's courtside. Go ahead.
Okay, the true story is, this was in 1985. They just had their success with 1984 album with Jump and Hot for Teacher in Panama. They were the biggest band in America in rock and roll at that time. Eddie came into town. I got a call from a friend in New York who was managing Patti Smythe. She was a Pittsburgh girl originally. And she said, I was just with Eddie Van Halen. He was friends with Patti Smythe, and he was considering asking Patti Smythe to be in the band. Nobody knew what was going on yet. So she said, he's coming into town. He has your number, but he didn't have it with him. I gave him your phone number. He's going to call you. So I thought, great. This is about Wednesday. So Sunday night, I get a call and at our kitchen telephone in Patterson Township. My dad says, wait a minute, Rick's here. My father answered the phone. So it was Eddie Van Halen. He goes, Rick, I'm in town. I said, I heard you were coming. He said, Val's here making a movie. He said, I can come out for a couple hours. I'm at the Bigelow Hotel right across from the Civic Arena. I said, I'll be right there. I probably made it there in 35 minutes. Picked him up. He looked like the epitome of a rock star. He had a sport jacket on that was all painted up, hand-painted. He had black high-top leather Converse tennis shoes. He said, I'm a poster boy for Converse tennis shoes. Me and Lyle Alzados, we make commercials together. So, I mean, he just looked like the epitome of a rock star. Looked friggin' immaculate. So we drive down to Beaver Falls. He wants to come to the house. He said, let's keep it quiet. Of course, the word got out, so everybody wanted to meet him. He was gracious, but he said, look, I'd like to go out and get a drink. I got something I got to tell you guys.
Quickly, we got about a minute and a half. Go ahead.
Okay, we take him to Charlie's courtside. And we put a Rolling Rock ball cap on him, sunglasses, and a blue jean jacket. And still somebody spotted him. They kept thinking he's Eddie Van Halen. He said he was Frank Nova. But it ended up being an all-nighter, Frank Nova.
I know.
It ended up being an all-nighter. Everyone else passed out, Rob, except for Eddie and I. We had it down in our garage, all of our equipment. Eddie got on a synthesizer keyboard of Joey's, and he worked on a song, two songs actually, and he worked on one over and over and over again. And I played along with him on Roland electronic drums.
All right.
And he kept talking. We had it all taped and everything. And he took tapes with him because Valerie Bertinelli called our house probably 20 times, flipping out. She knew he was partying. She knew he was with the Granati brothers, and anything could happen.
Anything did happen. And let me just tell you, the advice that he really wanted to share with them, an opinion, was replacing David Lee Roth as the front man of Van Halen that night. They tried to talk him out of it. It didn't happen. And they also spent time helping him go over and over what would eventually become this. And the breakout song, as Sammy Hagar became the frontman of Van Halen. Why Can't This Be Love? So to Rick and Dave Granati, God bless. Thank you. Great stories to the family that is Eddie Van Halen, his wife, his son, Wolfgang. God bless all of you. We have truly lost not just a rock icon, but a friend to many and a brother to the two gentlemen who joined me tonight. And believe me, even if it doesn't say Eddie Van Halen, somewhere you'll hear that music that'll be a part of generations to come being played on that brand that this man took to the stratosphere and made famous. This is Rob Pratt for John Flavin, Rick and David Granati, and everyone who loves Van Halen. Good night from News Radio 1020 KDKA.